The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is Tuesday, the 21st of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's Donal Kavanagh standing in for Greg on The Greg Hughes Show this morning. As ever, an action-packed show, some very interesting guests lined up. It's a Tuesday, which means we'll have our Community Garda information slot. That's coming up in the second hour of the programme. Lots to talk about between now and then. But as we always say, your views and your perspectives on the issues of the day, or indeed the issues you want to see put on the agenda for the day, are what is central to this programme. So if you want to get in contact with us, please text or WhatsApp us on 08 650 60 25,000. You can ring us on 07491 25,000. That WhatsApp number also good for text messages, by the way. You can call us, as we say, 07491 25,000, 0035 374 91 25,000, if you're outside of the dialing area. You can get us on social media. We're at Highland Radio on X, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, we're also on other channels as well. You can watch the programme unfold on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can also, of course, watch the programme unfold on, as we say, Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube and across our Facebook pages as well. We'll take a look at the papers this morning, starting off with the Irish Independent. And the Irish Independent teaches us a new word, which is very interesting. And that word is stagflation. Front page headline, warning energy crunch puts country at risk of stagflation. Now, when you look inside, the country is at risk of stagflation. Slow economic growth is combined with rising inflation as the energy crunch brought about by the war in the Middle East hits. And the Public Expenditure Minister, Jack Chambers, is to deliver a stark warning to Cabinet today, telling them that tighter spending controls will be needed in preparation for the October budget. And this is where, of course, immediately the deeper the Department of Public Expenditure finds is going to find itself in conflict with everybody else in Cabinet, because deeper wants to keep a tight grasp on the purse strings and look after the public money and the public purse, which is their responsibility. However, the energy crisis means there are rising costs in every other sector, which means every other sector is going to be looking for more money, because they're going to have to spend more money just to stand still in many ways. And maybe that's one of the reasons that we call this stagflation, because you're stagnant, you're standing still, but you're spending more money in the process of doing so, because your prices and your costs are rising and rising and rising. And this is not going to get easier anytime soon. Interesting, on the Independent, right beside the inside story on the stagflation issue, is a headline that warning electricity bills could rise €150 this year. And Charlie Weston writes that households face paying vastly more for electricity because of price rises from suppliers and higher network charges. Now, this is because if you look at people that spend money on fuel all the time, be it airlines, be it electricity generators, whatever, they hedge, which means they're probably buying their fuel 6 months, 9 months, even 12 months before they're actually using it. So they have not yet been hit by the rising prices in fuel. So if they're buying their fuel 6 months in advance, we're still operating on bills coming through powered by fuel that cost what fuel cost in October of last year. However, in 4 months' time, 5 months' time, 6 months' time, we're then going to start getting higher and higher and higher bills, because then the electricity generators and everything else are going to be using the fuel that they had to buy at today's prices. So there are going to be more price rises down the line. And I hate to sound all doom and gloom about this, but that is the case, that we haven't seen the huge energy rises yet in terms of electricity, because, as we said, they're working on the fuel they bought 6 months back. But in 6 months' time, it could be a very, very different story. Irish Times this morning, and this goes back to a conversation we had yesterday with Emma from Atlantic Travel in Letterkenny, earning its cancellations to hit 23,000 passengers. Now, it's reckoned about 23,000 passengers travelling on 430 flights over the summer could be disrupted by earning its cancellations blamed on maintenance delays. Now, what Emma told us yesterday was that these maintenance delays will be done on planes which are kept in places such as routes like Dublin Heathrow, Dublin Malaga, the routes that would have multiple flights a day, or at least one or two flights a day. So anyone who's had their flight cancelled, well, there'll be a flight either the day before, the day after, or in some cases 5 or 6 hours later. So the disruption should be minimal in that respect, that they won't be hitting flights where there might be two or one service a week. They won't be the ones that are getting hit. It'll be the high frequency busy lines that will be affected. So the disruption to passengers should be minimal, and hopefully that does remain the case. Also, I mean, main headline in the Times, ministers face curbs on spending amid global volatility. And again, that goes back to the stagflation thing we were speaking about earlier. Jack Chambers basically is going to have to be saying, look, we need to keep a very tight grip on our public expenditure as we go into the future. Interesting picture of the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste and the President as the Council of State meets to discuss asylum reforms. It's interesting because they're discussing the constitutionality of the International Protection Bill, and I find it slightly, not ironic is the wrong word, but if we're reviewing the legislation, if the legislation is being reviewed by the Council of State, it seems slightly strange to me that front and centre in the picture are the leader and deputy leader of the parliament that has actually come up with the law. I would have thought that they would take one step back, and if the Council of State is to review it, it should be more the legal experts and the former Taoiseach who'd be looking at this with a slightly more objective lens, perhaps. But we do have the Council of State that's reviewing the legislation, includes the two leaders of the government that brought in the legislation. It's an interesting one. And that Council of State meeting brought forward all sorts of interesting discussions yesterday. Not least the one about Leo Varadkar, by the way, and the comments that he made. And we're going to get back to those in a moment because they are referenced elsewhere. Front page of the Irish Daily Mail this morning. We don't feel safe in our own homes, warned Gardaí. Officers feel they're being targeted following fuel protests with their personal details published online. And the Garda Representative Association's annual delegate conference in Westport yesterday was told members are being targeted by bad actors on social media where personal details, including threats against the young children, are being circulated. Now, and this is something which I think is very unfortunate, and I think it speaks to one of these issues, that we have a situation where people went out and protested, a lot of whom genuinely went out as bus operators or hauliers or farmers or whoever or various other business people who felt at the end of their tether, who felt they had no option but to do what they did. And they went out and they protested, and they did so in a genuine and a meaningful way to express what they were feeling. And then inevitably the conversation then starts to become, it's being hijacked by X, it's being hijacked by Y, it's being hijacked by Z. And this is one of the things that happens, that others come in, involve themselves in the protests, and then they start following their own agendas. And what then happens is genuine protesters get pulled in inadvertently into a morass of debate is, oh, look at what the protesters are now doing to Gardaí. And it's utterly unfair on people who go out and protest in a genuine way. But it's what happens. And sadly, we're now starting to see that develop. We're starting to see that element of, I won't say debate, because it's not debate. It's an attempt to move the discussion and to move the paradigm of the dialogue from one thing to another and to bring other political impetus into it. And it's that is not good. Let's move on. We'll look at the red tops and the front of the Irish Daily Star has what I think is a really interesting headline. Who do we think we were? And it's a reference obviously to the 1926 census, details of which were published at the weekend. 20 million people, and you'll have heard that on the news with Ryan as well, that 20 million people have been looking at the census. Now, speaking to one or two people who went down complete and utter rabbit holes over the past while. Now, I haven't done that yet. Now, the reason I haven't done that yet, to be honest, is I actually went down a bit of a rabbit hole when they published the 3 years ago? They published the 1911 census figures. And I went down a huge rabbit hole on that one because I would have had the addresses of grandfathers and great-grandfathers. So we were down looking, and there was some really interesting things, most of which I knew, some of which I didn't, that we were able to find out. So we'll have to go down another rabbit hole now with the 1926 census. But we haven't done it just yet. But that's on the, there's a big feature on the inside of the Irish Daily Star. And indeed, there are other papers too, have references to this and stories on this. The inside of the Irish Daily Star, and I'm always one for a good pun, Galway Clinic. Elite Hospital warns patients to beware of attacks by flying pests. Hospital bosses have warned patients and visitors they may be attacked by aggressive seagulls. Angry gulls have swooped on unsuspecting victims in the car park of the Galway Clinic in recent weeks. One woman who was targeted described her ordeal as scary. So if you are going to the Galway Clinic, and let's face it, a lot of people in Donegal and the North West do go to the Galway Clinic. That is a potential issue you have to worry about. You may be attacked by seagulls while you are there. The Irish Daily Mirror, Odegaard, we still believe the title can be ours. That's an Arsenal reference. Arsenal lost to Manchester City at the weekend. It was a tight game, but Arsenal lost, which means Manchester City now have their Premier League future in their own hands. Manchester City can win the Premier League if they win all their future games. Now, the whole outlook now is that Arsenal need City to slip up at least once, and there's, what, five games to go? But Odegaard, the captain, does believe that they can win. Wolves, sadly, last night were relegated. There was a draw between West Ham and Crystal Palace, and that means Wolves are now gone. Now, let's be honest, we knew Wolves were gone for quite some time, but Wolves are now gone from the Premiership, and the Arsenal-Man City thing, it's going to go to the wire, and it's always interesting when it goes to the wire, because last day of the season on a day when the Premiership is up for grabs can be interesting. And I was watching live the time Man City won it for the first time with Aguero, and that was just an amazing thing to be watching. I want to go to the Irish Sun because this is my favourite story of the day. And I'm going to be honest, if you had showed me this story 20 days ago, if it were the 1st rather than the 21st of April, I would have said, this is the best April Fool story I've seen for a while. It's on page 11 of the Irish Sun. Sounds fishy is the top banner. Hooked lines and sinker. Salmon swim further in the wild on cocaine. A study has been done in Sweden that shows salmon exposed to cocaine swim further than their drug-free pals. It shows the illicit drug, which is increasingly found in rivers and lakes, changes how fish move. It's the first study of its kind. Well, there's the thing. 105 juvenile Atlantic salmon were fitted with trackers over 8 weeks. Some were exposed to cocaine via slow-release implants, others to benzodiazepine, I think, which coke breaks down to, while the rest were clean. Researchers found fish with the benzodiazepine in their system swam up to 9 times more per week than unexposed salmon and dispersed up to 12.2 kilometres faster across Sweden's Lake Vättern. Best of all, this is a story about salmon on cocaine. The story is written by Alex West. And I can't help wondering, does he have a brother called John? If you live in Inishowen, in fact, if you live anywhere in North Donegal, but particularly if you live in Inishowen, there was a very important meeting yesterday that took place between the HSE and concerned residents and representatives from Buncrana about the future of the Buncrana nursing unit. We know that there are upgrade works to be done at the unit, and it has been closed to allow that to happen. But then we know that there's been delay upon delay upon delay, and inevitably fears began to be expressed that there was something deeper going on. Joined by, first of all, Councillor Fionnán Bradley, who is the Lasca Hurlach of the Inishowen Municipal District. Fionnán, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal, and good morning to all your listeners.
Fionnán, we spoke last week in the context of a new story on this, and you made it clear that you were going to this meeting to get answers, to get timelines and to get details. You didn't want just to be told what's been said over and over again in press releases. You wanted movement and you wanted clarity. Did you get it?
Yes, Donal. I have to say that we definitely did get some clarity on key issues in relation to the Buncrana Nursing Unit and the works that have been planned and the works that have been delayed. The very first thing that I want to say is the first question on my list to the HSE yesterday was, is the HSE closing Buncrana Nursing Unit? Because that is the question that I am asked when I'm out and about in Buncrana and when people ring me or email me on this issue. And I'm delighted to be able to confirm that the HSE gave the unequivocal answer yesterday that they absolutely are not closing Buncrana Nursing Unit. So they made it crystal clear that the service will be maintained and retained. And indeed, after the works are completed, What they said is we'll have as good as a brand new building, and it'll be fully compliant. Apart from that, after the works were completed, we had been led to believe all along that there was going to be a reduction in beds to satisfy the requirements of HICWA, who are the regulator. But I'm delighted to be able to confirm that that is not the case. So we got a verbal commitment from the HSE yesterday that they'll be maintaining the current number of beds in the facility, which is 40 or 41. It's 41 at the minute. There may be a reduction to 40, but we are more or less standing still in relation to the number of beds. Then in relation to timelines, Donal, and look, I really do want to issue these with the health warning. They may changed by a number of weeks. It's our intention and our hope that they won't. But the HSE said yesterday that they intend to have the project approved for tender by the end of May. So it would actually go live on e-tenders at the end of May, and that they would appoint a contractor at the end of August. But they stressed that they are movable feasts, and I really do want to stress the same because I don't want to give anybody false hope. But at least that's a lot more clarity than we had this time yesterday, Donald.
We do know that initially when these works were being planned, and we've known for years that these works were necessary, as you said, HICWA has been flagging this for quite some time after several inspections, a decision was taken that they would take Buncrana and Carndonagh together. They would do Carndonagh first and would only do Buncrana after Carn was finished. In retrospect, should they have moved concurrently on the two?
Well, if you don't mind, Donal, I would maybe come in on your first point. To the best of my knowledge, and this was before my time on the council, the Buncrana facility was actually to be done first, followed by Carndonagh. But somewhere along the line, for some reason, the two were flipped, and Carndonagh was done first, and that's completed. And might I say, badly needed for the people of Carndonagh and North Innishowen. But yes, to answer your question, both facilities should have been done concurrently. They really should have. And yesterday, I had asked the HSE in relation to the works in Buncrana, instead of doing it in phases, because as far as I'm aware, they're going to do it in three phases, I'd asked them to do all of the works at the same time, because at this stage, we need to do everything we possibly can to just expedite the works that have to be done.
Well, there's been a very active campaign in Buncrana, particularly in the past number of weeks, and central to that has been Maureen Loughery-Tolley, who's involved with the Inish Theatre Group, and protests and demonstrations coordinated by her and the group were very effective. There's no doubt about that. Maureen joins us as well. Maureen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. Thanks for having me on.
Maureen, you attended the meeting along with Fionnán. Do you share Fionnán's hope that following yesterday and following the clarity, that there is a confidence there that this is going to proceed and proceed quickly?
Yeah, we do. We were very pleased yesterday with the outcome of the meeting. We all sat round the table. They heard us out. We all got to say what we needed to say, and we did get good feedback from them, and it all was very positive. As I totally agree with what Fionnán says now, as he says, you know, are we being optimistic about the end of August? Possibly, but we have pressed them for a follow-up meeting on the 22nd of June to find out where we're at then with the progress of the tender. So I think as long as they know that we're going to keep pushing and we have meetings in the pipeline, then I do think they will keep pushing as well, because they know that we want answers. And I mean, I'm on today, but I was part of a campaign team with Elizabeth Ann Nelson, Tracy Murphy and Sharon Carey, and the Gairs actually approached me to come on and help. But they've been campaigning for 2 years plus behind the scenes. And then Fionnán has been amazing as well. He's kept us in the loop all the time, and because the lines of communication were very poor, and that's the one thing the HSE did admit yesterday. They were not coming back to us, they were not answering us, and they have promised us that that will not happen going into the future as well.
This maybe is a validation too of the campaign, because it does raise the question, had you not had hundreds out on the streets of Buncrana a few weeks back making their views known, had people like Fionnán and others not been as vocal as they have been over the past while, would the HSE be as forward? Would the HSE be treating this with the same urgency as they appear to be treating it today?
Unfortunately, I don't think so, Donal. I think it shouldn't have taken, it shouldn't have had to take what it took to get them around the table yesterday. But I do think it was the councillors being vocal, particularly Fionnan, and ourselves taking to the streets. They knew that we meant business. We had hundreds of people on the streets with 48 hours notice. I think if we had another couple of days notice, we would have had well over 1,000 people. And they know that. So I think that's what it took to get them around the table.
Fionnan, going back to yourself, I mean, you're a member of Fianna Fáil, Jack Murray is a member of Sinn Féin, Joy Beard, also in Buncrana, a member of the 100% Redress Party. There's other parties represented on the Inishowen Municipal District. It's clear to say that every one of the councillors in the Inishowen MD spoke with one voice on this, and you took the lead, but there is no doubt this wasn't one politician's victory. This was all politicians' victories.
Listen, Donal, absolutely, and if you don't mind me saying, I don't even think it's any politician's victory, and I'm not saying it because Maureen's here on your show today, but genuinely, the four ladies yesterday, everybody in Buncrana and everybody in Inishowen should be so, so proud of them, and the way that they represented everybody at that table. And you see, their experience is the lived experience of those who either have family members in Buncrana Nursing Unit or who would like to have or should have family members there, but unfortunately their family members have to be elsewhere because the facility isn't open. So, I mean, I had more or less been banging my head off a brick wall for at least the last year or 18 months. But really, from the protest and from people like Maureen, Elizabeth Ann, Tracy and Sharon, who are living through, you know, the difficult times that we're experiencing as a result of the unit being closed and are dealing with the stress, when the HSE realised that human side to it, I think that's what drove the project on. And I really think that's what won it for yesterday. But politically, absolutely, yeah, it has been. Everybody has been saying the same thing and everybody has been pushing very hard. And I do want to thank my own colleague, Minister Charlie McConnell, because I had requested on a number of occasions a meeting like the one yesterday and I just couldn't get a response. It wasn't that I was getting a negative response, I was just getting no response. So then I asked the Minister to intervene. And in fairness, as was acknowledged yesterday, because of that intervention, we had the meeting yesterday. So it's been a united front.
Now, this isn't just a matter of you and the other campaigners sitting back and waiting for things to happen. There is a follow-up meeting in June, as I understand, and you'll be going to that meeting again with the same level of determination, with the same clinical desire to get answers, to get timelines and to get details.
Absolutely. And to give people maybe hope and as much information as possible following the meeting yesterday, it was sort of in two phases. So, we talked about the works that are planned and the works that have been delayed that have to happen immediately. But we did also talk about the future. And there were conversations around capacity and the need for increased capacity. I mean, given that we were to go down to 30 beds, the fact that we're going to stay at the 41 is excellent news, but we're only standing still all the while the population is ever increasing and indeed getting older. So we need to have conversations around an increase in bed capacity. And we also yesterday talked about our day services and again relayed some lived experience and feedback from service users of the day service. So the HSE have undertaken to review bringing the day services back to a purpose-built building at the facility, separate now to the works that are going to happen very soon, hopefully. And they also did say that they would review the chalets which are there. There are a number of chalets for independent living, which were set up at the same time as the nursing unit back in the 1980s, but they've long been out of use, but they are badly needed. I'll be going to the next meeting on the 22nd of June, hopefully to receive some information in relation to progress on the works now, but indeed also maybe starting to have those conversations with the HSE about the future and what the facility needs to look like and needs to grow to in the next number of years and decades.
Fionnan Bradley, and also thank you. Maureen, I want to give the final word to yourself. A word that Fionnan mentioned in his opening remarks to us was communication, and an acknowledgement by the HSE that communication had not been good. From your point of view, you as a relative who had a close family member in a residential setting like that, I mean, from your point of view, from that lived experience, the communication issue, how important is it?
Oh, it's very important, Donald. My mother's actually a current resident down in the Buncrana nursing unit. The three ladies, parents are were respite patients that can no longer avail of the respite because it's not available. And the communication is vital. That's the one thing we pushed yesterday. They need to keep us in the loop. You know, it's not good enough that they only answer. It was fantastic that Minister Charlie McConnell got the answer and got the meeting, but it shouldn't have to come to that. You know, so it's like, oh, you know, we weren't as important to get the answers back from them. But once he intervened, no, that's not fair. And they did acknowledge that. So communication is vital going forward.
Maureen, thank you very much indeed. And Councillor Fionn Bradley, thank you very much indeed as well. It's hopefully a good news story. We'll be keeping a very close eye on this. Not as close an eye as you'll be keeping, but we will be keeping a close eye on. And please do make sure that you keep us briefed as well. And we'll be following this with interest. And hopefully we will see building begin and actually work at Buncrana Nursing Unit get underway in September, as is the current hope. Thank you all very much indeed.
Thanks, Donal.
That is, as we say, that's Maureen and Councillor Fionn Bradley there as well. And they're talking about that commitment that they've been given, and the number one commitment that they've been given and the important commitment they've been given is that the hospital is not going to close, that there will be 40 to 41 beds. It'll maintain the same number of beds. Is not going to go down. And we will hopefully see a growth over the years in these services being offered, and hopefully maybe day services coming in there as well. Just a number of your comments before we go for a break. Cotter says, can someone please explain to me how this country can claim we have a booming economy and suffer a recession at the same time? I've never felt more financially poor in all my 50 years of living, and I've been through a few financial crises over the years. That's an interesting, I suppose, the difference between, there is a huge difference between a thriving economy on a macro level, looking at the various national metrics, and a micro economy as in how we're feeling about things in our own pockets. And one of the issues we have with the Irish economy, and it's something I think sometimes we don't fully understand, is the level to which we talk about the huge surplus and the huge tax take and all those things, the level at which those are founded on a couple of multinationals who have their European headquarters in Dublin, and they channel huge amounts of money that are not generated in Ireland, that do not really make any contribution per se to the Irish economy, but they're big figures on an accounting sheet and on a balance sheet. They are all part of the sort of the national economy, because they're all part of the money of companies that are based here. But realistically speaking, it's money that's not actually in any way involved in the economy, if that makes sense. And I think there is so much of that money, notional funds held by multinationals, but it's not actually making anything, it's not actually producing anything, and it's certainly not filtering down to the likes of you and I. And I think that's the situation that we're in. Let's talk about place names, because there is a wealth of information and a wealth of culture and history in Irish place names. We are currently sitting here in Dunningall, the fort of the foreigner, or Tyrconnell, the land of Connell. That's the two names for Donegal. You can take your pick. Right beside us is Dura, the oak grove. And there are numerous examples right across this county of names that actually tell the story of the place, what the place is, what the place has done, what the place represents. And it's a culture that very often we're unaware of. Conor na Gaeilge and others are trying to change that. They have launched the Akgelu campaign, and excuse my pronunciation, but it's been launched by Conra, urging people to use Irish place names in everyday life. And we are going back to Zoom, and I'm delighted to say a very good morning to Aidan O'Day, who is the Director of Development and Deputy General Secretary of Conra. Aidan, Majinua.
Madma, Mila Buikas, Asangura, thanks very much. And first of all, can I say your pronunciation of Akwele was perfect, so no worries there.
No, it can be very strange. And when you're a Waterford man living in Donegal, you get very self-conscious about your pronunciation of Irish, because they can be two very different languages sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And well, as we always say, and especially with this campaign, you know, when it comes to place names, it's better to, I suppose, any pronunciation of any place name, Askwelge, is still better than the what I would see as very much a gobbledygook made-up version, which we normally use in day-to-day lives. And we still use 100 years after independence. So, yeah, that's kind of where this Akwelu campaign comes from.
In terms of the I mean, and interesting, we're in Donegal, the birthplace of Brian Friel, and one of the most interesting considerations of this whole topic was, of course, Friel's own play translations, when he looked at the very anglicisation of Irish place names and how, and it tells the story quite starkly and frankly as to how effectively English place names were, not to put too fine a point on it, imposed on Irish areas.
Yeah, it's one of the things, and actually I remember going to see translations, and I think I've read it as when I was younger, but I've seen it in recent years, and it's one of the things that really I walked out of seeing that play, and I think it's the same for anyone who walks out of seeing translations, and you just feel inspired to say, God, isn't it crazy that we just accepted these made-up names for our towns and villages? And these words that don't mean anything, we've put them over the original names, and that we still accept them. And it's something that really got to me. And I did a bit of research, and we were working with other colleagues and people in kind of other Irish language organisations in the community. And that's kind of the basis behind this idea. And looking, also taking inspiration from other countries like India, where they have begun decolonizing their own place names and town names and city names. And there's some famous examples there, like Calcutta, going back to the original Kolkata, and Bombay to Mumbai. And I suppose we can take inspiration from these other countries. It doesn't have to be seen as an anti English thing or anything like that. It can simply be a way of getting back to our roots and decolonizing and saying, this was the original name, why don't we use that name? It actually means something, instead of the name that was kind of forced and imposed on us, and that we for some reason we still accept.
We do have one councillor here actually who refuses to use anglicised place names and will always use the Irish language version, and it's all great, but sometimes there can be confusion, because there are areas of Donegal where people may not actually be aware of what the Irish name of a place is. Now, a lot of the time, it's going to be, yeah, Dira is Derry, Anstravaughan is Straban, Letchurcannon is Letterkenny, but if you start going into West Donegal, you start getting places like Antlochenlia, just Dunlow, and you know, things, and it can become sort of quite difficult for people if they are not in the area and they don't know the area. And that is going to be one of the biggest problems you'll face. In a lot of the cases, it's obvious. I mean, Ondangle is Dingle, but...
Yeah, a lot of the cases, what we're seeing is, I suppose, 90% of cases of place names in towns and villages are that we see in English do derive from the Irish language. So it is very obvious. And I suppose the answer to that is, just with use, it changes. And one of the things we're going to be talking to public bodies, talking to private companies, seeing if they'll get on board. A lot of organisations have already signed up to this place names pledge we have as part of this campaign. And we can take inspiration from places like the GAA, where one of the things that I think most people in Ireland would have a good understanding of the county names in Irish. And a lot of that, well, obviously people learn them in school, but one thing that makes them a lot more visible is the county names and GA jerseys, for example. And if we can take inspiration from that and say, well, if we just use these things a bit more and they were a bit more visible, I think people would understand them. And we'd actually go a step further and say, you know, well, everything the government's doing or everything public bodies are doing, instead of saying Donegal, why don't they say Donegal? Instead of saying Letterkenny, why don't they say Letterkenny? And it becomes more obvious over time, and the more you see it, and that's the best way to learn it. And that's what we've seen in Wales, in all over other countries, even Australia, where they're decolonising a lot of their place names back to the original, I suppose, Aboriginal names that were in those areas. So it's it just makes sense from the way we see it. And there's we're not saying change them overnight. We're saying it's about time we kind of stood up for these names, and that's why we've introduced a pledge where people can put their name to it and say, yeah, I'm going to try. And you don't have to do every single one every single time, but I'm going to try and use Irish place names because they mean something, because they were the original form, instead of English place names from now on.
One of the challenges is going to be RTE and other national broadcasters. If you can get national broadcasters on board to do this, That would be a huge step, I'm sure. Have you tried to do that, and have you had any success in that?
A bit, but like one of the difficulties we've had with RTE, for example, over the years, but they, and things have got a bit better as even they'd anglicise even Gaelic place names, Gwydor, I suppose the Gwydor, and all over Gaelic place names, and thankfully they have got a bit better with that in recent years. But again, I suppose if we can show that the interest is there from the public, we are seeing a huge rise in interest in the Irish language nationally, and a huge amount of people going back to learn Irish. And it's become very, I suppose, cool at the moment. So we're trying to say, if we can show this momentum, if we get enough people signed up to this pledge, enough companies, enough businesses, enough private bodies doing it, then it helps us to go and talk to these and to talk to broadcasters like RTE and others and say, why not? And perhaps again, it would be a thing of starting off with county names or bigger town names, and bit by bit, introducing the Irish language versions, the proper official, the original versions of place names more over time.
There is a website, loganam.ie, where people can actually verify official names for townlands and geographical locations. And there's also the Conora website where people can actually sign that pledge.
Yeah, so there's loganam.ie, what gives you all information about your place name, and if you're in the north, it'd be placenamesni.org, which would be very similar, and we link to them on our website also. But the campaign here is called Aquelu, or re-Gaelicising your place names, and that's if you just search for Aquelu, Athgaelu, or it's cnag.ie/Aquelu. That's where you can find all the information, or where you can sign up yourself for the place names pledge, and make that step towards re-Gaelicising your own area. And I'd encourage anyone to do it. What I always say to people can be surprised sometimes, but An Post and all of the delivery companies will still deliver your letters if you use your Irish place names when you're ordering online or ordering from anywhere. It works. It's there for a reason. You can use it with the banks. You can use it with when you're signing up any of your official documents. You can use your Irish language. And just bit by bit, normalising it a bit more is, I suppose, the aim of this campaign.
I'd better acknowledge, by the way, we've had a message from Marchie Nuchahan, who has... gently corrected me that Dunningall is not the fort of the foreigner. Dunningall is the fort that repelled the foreigner. And a very, very important distinction there, perhaps historically.
There you go. Yeah, and again, that's the kind of thing that's the beauty of these Loganamnica and the hidden history behind so many of them. And you don't realise sometimes, and the amount of people who live in an area and wouldn't know the meaning of that area. And it's crazy to think about it when you like it's that's we never really delved into it, and you can learn so much more by unearthing the Irish language versions.
Certainly food for thought. Edon O'Day, thank you very much indeed. Gorra Mahagus. There is a very interesting conversation coming up this week at the Central Library in Letterkenny. A talk has been given by Emeritus Professor John Sweeney of Maynooth University. And I suppose when it comes to experts on climate in this country, there are very few with more knowledge and more history of study in this area than Professor Sweeney. He's a regular guest on national television. You I suspect you'll recognise his voice instantly, even if you don't recognise the name. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
John, we're all used to seeing you and hearing you indeed on national channels discussing issues of climate, issues of environment, and the need for action to be taken. And one of the points you're going to be discussing at this event in the Central Library in Letterkenny on Thursday night is the fact that Ireland in general, and this is the interesting line, and Donegal in particular, are highly vulnerable to climate shocks.
Yes, that's right. I'm looking forward to the event, not least, as you mentioned, that my accent better understood than perhaps down here in the east of Ireland. But yes, I think, you know, it's true to say that for many of your listeners, climate will have kind of faded a little from the public agenda over the past year or two. And of course, we've had very pressing international events which have kind of downgraded it. But what I wanted to say really this weekend is that far from disappearing and being to some extent irrelevant in many people's minds, then climate has actually become more and more pressing in recent years. You know, with the amount of energy we're putting into the atmosphere artificially has now reached stupendous limits to the extent that we can't even measure the energy in the conventional ways we could before. So we now measure them in terms of the equivalent of Hiroshima atomic bomb explosions. And we're going through now an additional heat into the atmosphere of 12 atomic bomb explosions every second. So that kind of heat is generating an acceleration in climate change. And of course, we're vulnerable here in Ireland to anything in particular that changes the temperature of the air and the oceans. And Donegal, I think, is in the forefront of many of those impacts. We know how Donegal bears the brunt of many of the Atlantic storms. I mean, I think Storm Eoghan was one which will be etched in the memory of many Donegal people for a long time. Indeed, Horn Head was for a long time the most windy place in Ireland. But Donegal is vulnerable to the changes in temperature which are occurring. Donegal has warmed up by 0.6 to 1 degrees in the past 30 years. And it's also vulnerable to the increase in rainfall that we're seeing. Donegal is now 7% wetter than it was 30 years ago. And that's creating vulnerability in terms of floods in particular. And of course, we've seen that happen in many years in Donegal around Letterkenny. We've seen also Donegal being vulnerable to sea level rise because many of the most beautiful beaches of Donegal, many of the great dune systems of Donegal are dynamic systems. And when the wind changes or when the sea level rises, it tips the balance towards more erosion and the potential loss of sea level defences like sand dunes. And of course, places like the Five Finger Strand, for example, is one which many Donegal people will recognise as particularly vulnerable. So there is a whole host of things which I think are important to Donegal to preserve for the future, to ensure resilience to what's coming down the line in terms of climate change. And I wanted really just to highlight what's been happening globally, but also why that is important for Donegal as well, and how it will affect our day-to-day lives in Donegal in terms of farming, in terms of water management, in terms of biodiversity. All of these things are under pressure, and I think we have to take what steps we can to ensure that the next generation, if you like, do not suffer from the inactivity of the current generation.
Can I put something?
Say we're not doing enough today.
Can I put something to you that you hear an awful lot? Sure. And it's someone saying, I'm being told I can't have a proper coal fire. I'm being told I need to cut back on my driving. I'm being told I have to do X, Y, and Z. But yet every 5 minutes there's a new coal-fired power station opening in China. What difference is what I'm doing making when there's huge factories opening on a daily basis elsewhere in the world?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first point there is that China is actually doing an awful lot more than we are here in Ireland. China has the largest renewable energy program. I think they've generated more in the way of solar panel activity in the last year than the rest of the world combined. And yes, they are still dependent a little on coal, but their emissions are now tapering off. Their emissions are now plateauing. And they're beginning to fall. Now, going back to the point about what does my effort make? Well, it's a bit like saying, you know, if I throw my litter in the street in Letterkenny, what difference does that make to the overall litter problem of Donegal? There's a moral issue here that we have to do our own little piece. And of course, unless we do, we can't expect others outside of Ireland to give us any kind of sympathy, because if you take the EU as a whole, EU emissions have fallen by around about 40% since 1990. We in Ireland have managed 5%. So we are not doing, we are not pulling our weight. And as a result of all of that, we are going to face fines down the road, which will be very considerable, which will be very onerous. Several billion have been suggested for that. And that means that if we are to protect the next generation from facing a very difficult economic burden as well as an environmental burden, then we have a responsibility to do our bit. Now, in terms of burning fossil fuels, surely the lessons of last week have been learned that we can't go down that road indefinitely, because it makes us even more insecure in the years ahead. And I think that's something that I think we have to take on board. We have to protect those people in energy poverty. We have to protect those small farmers with relatively small dairy herds, for example. And we have to ensure that that kind of an economy continues, but not at the expense of destroying the future for the next generation.
Can it be turned around?
Yep. At this stage, I have to say sea level cannot be turned around. Sea level rise will continue in Donegal for the next two centuries. That's a sobering thought of what we've done to the ocean. We can still turn around the climate a bit. We can turn around and at least stop climate warming beyond that 1.5 degrees or even 2 degrees, which is the tipping point for many other natural events to occur, which would be very harmful. And indeed, we may have even passed some of those tipping points at the moment in terms of Greenland, in terms of coral reefs, for example. But we can change it. We can at least slow it down to give ourselves options for the future. And that, of course, is very important, especially for places like Donegal, that we at least ensure that we don't go down the slippery slope of excluding the next generation from having a chance, a fighting chance, of tackling climate change.
And if you want to hear more from Emeritus Professor John Sweeney, John will be at the Central Library in Letterkenny on Thursday night, a discussion on the weather and its effects in Donegal and what we can do to mitigate that. It's at 6:30, Central Library Letterkenny, at 6:30, as I say, on Thursday evening. For the moment, John, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald.
That's Emeritus Professor John Sweeney there. Caller says, we're all buying into climate change, but the new energy ideas for older people, it's just not financially sustainable. Forcing older families to use oil and electricity at today's prices is difficult. It's expensive now. Imagine the process come November and December when we're back into the winter months. That's a comment we're hearing an awful lot. A couple of comments before we go any further. A little village between Letterkenny and Manor called Pluck. Where did that come from? That's relating back to the place name discussion that we had earlier with Aidan. Caller says, Donal, you sound like more like a government spokesperson this morning. The government are handing out millions to other countries and non-Irish people, and they're not looking after the people at home, so they have plenty of money. Thank you. Okay. Another caller, I see that St. Columb's Cathedral in Derry have begun accepting card payments for donations. Should we follow suit here in Donegal? Is the church lacking donations as people rarely carry cash these days? I think the answer is yes and yes. I think a lot of people nowadays are finding themselves in a position as fundraisers where they're trying to raise money, and what happens is they find, oh, sorry, I've got no cash, I've got a card, I've got a phone. And more now people will have little scanners with them and they can use those instead. And I think that's becoming more and more the case. And a caller says, whose responsibility is it to direct traffic when a diversion is in place? I got caught in a diversion because of an accident. One sign to say diversion is in place, but no further signs. I put it into Google Maps and ended up in a circle twice. I'm now late for an appointment in Sligo Hospital. It's extremely frustrating. It can be a difficult one. I remember I almost missed a flight once because of the exact same thing. There was a collision on the road and I was sent down one sort of small back road, and didn't quite know whether I was on the right track or not, and thought at one point I was going to miss the flight because I was heading for Ireland West Airport in Knock at the time. I did make the flight, and then, I'll be honest, I had a thought, look, I am being diverted down a road because of a collision. It could be a serious collision. It was. There could be a very serious injury or worse. And that was the case. And what if I was... if I was made late by a diversion, the reality of it was, and this is just me, the way I was thinking at the time, look, whatever situation I found myself in, there was somebody in a hell of a lot worse situation than I was at that stage. Now, let's move on. I want to talk to you about insurance, and we're going to talk to Gillian Devereaux, who is a senior loss adjuster at Aviva Insurance Ireland, because there has been a major problem with regards to a home repairs scam. Gillian, good morning.
Good morning. Goodness, we're not giving people good news this morning.
No, we're sort of getting used to that. But in terms of this scam, tell us what's happening, because, you know, when it comes to home repairs, it's an area that could open up people to significant losses.
I agree, yeah. And so I operate within Aviva's claims household department, and we've seen, you'll probably know, Storm Dara, which was late 2024, Storm Éowyn. We just seen people and homeowners been taken advantage of, which is a real concern for us. Unfortunately, you know, after such weather events, there can be just attempts by bogus contractors to promise low cost, fast repairs, and they can often leave our policyholders and customers in a worse off position. And for a number of reasons, you know, they can take deposits and then disappear. They can undertake work, but substandard work. They can maybe discourage a homeowner from contacting their insurance company. And it's really, really important just to say that, look, the contract, your contract for home insurance is between you and your insurance company. There's no party external to that that should influence you in reporting a claim or potentially, you know, and you can report a claim and might necessarily pursue it, but your insurance company will register the claim and more often than not appoint a loss adjuster who is someone who will go out, inspect the damage. So it's raising awareness of that for homeowners.
Should people contact the insurance company before they contact a contractor or a potential source of repairs?
I suppose the simple answer there is yes, but there's the reality as well, because if you have emergency work that needs to be done, very often your first point of contact is, you know, people are proactive. People want to mitigate damage. So you're thinking, OK, I need to contact the plumber. I need to contact the roofer. I need to contact the relevant person who can repair this damage, which is really, really important. But in conjunction with that, why not just make a really quick phone call to your broker or to your insurance company to see if they can offer help and guide you? And very often, the insurance company will deal directly with your contractor. So we find that it actually takes the stress away from the policyholder or the homeowner if their insurance company are involved. You know, we probably are more tuned in to bogus contractors. We really see elderly people living on their own, just vulnerable people being targeted by these bogus contractors. Like we've had instances where they'll say it's a really minor repair, we'll start work today, and then before you know it, they've a section of the roof stripped. They're saying to the homeowner, look, the repair costs have doubled, trebled, and we need this money now, and we need to do this work now. And again, that's just a red flag where someone is saying, we can't wait, you can't wait. There's no point in reporting this to your insurance company. Just trust your instinct, and you know that's the most I think we can say to people. But as I say, it's just raising that awareness of it.
Is there a list or a database of approved contractors that insurance companies are happy to deal with? And if not, should there be?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So there is a trade body registrations, a number of them, which if you Google, you'll get access to them. It generally means if they're registered with a trade body that they are legitimate and that they're insured. And that's the other thing as well. Don't be afraid to ask for their insurance details. And don't be afraid to ask, certainly recommend looking for a written estimate. And if it is a legitimate trader, they'll probably offer that up front. You know, they'll want to give you certainty around the scope, i.e. what work they're going to do and how much they're going to charge you.
Gillian, thank you very much indeed for that. And of course, the other piece of advice we would give people is, if in doubt, if you're approached, particularly if you're approached cold by a contractor who arrives at your front doorstep without having been called unsolicited, then perhaps if you're suspicious, maybe give the Gardaí a tinkle as well, because they're always on the lookout for that.
They're always on the lookout, and our stats show that there's been significant rises in cases reported to the Gardaí. So yes, Gardaí and your insurance company can help you and guide you.
Gillian, thank you very much indeed. Food for thought indeed. And sadly, it does appear that we are going to get more rather than less storms in the short to medium term at least. So this is going to be an issue for many people here, particularly in the county like Donegal. So thank you for that advice. And we'd all, I'm sure, take it on board. That was Gillian Devereaux, who's a senior loss adjuster at Aviva Insurance Ireland DAC.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
And it is indeed time for the Community Garda information slot on the show this morning. And delighted to say welcome back after a bit of a hiatus to Sergeant Eunan Walsh. Eunan, great to have you back.
Thank you, Donald. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. Eunan, let's go straight to it. And we're going to begin with an assault which occurred in Buncrana.
Yes, Donald, this is an assault which occurred actually the weekend before last, Sunday morning, the 5th of April. So sometime Saturday night, Sunday morning. The first incident involving a group of males happened on the main street area of Buncrana at approximately 12:30 a.m. on Sunday morning, the 5th of April. One man sustained injuries as a result of an assault, and we believe the same men were involved in a second altercation, again on the main street area, sometime between 2:30 a.m. and 2:45 a.m. And again, the previously injured man sustained further injuries. He attended hospital to receive medical treatment for, thankfully, which are serious but not life-threatening. And again, we appeal for anyone who have may witnessed assaults or in the area at the time and who may have dash cam to contact the Gardaí in Buncrana 074-932-0540. Or again, the confidential line, Garda confidential line 1-800-666-111.
And as I said, that happened in the early hours of the 5th of April, which was Easter Sunday. So it was Easter Saturday night.
Easter Sunday morning.
An incident in the Port Road area of Letterkenny.
Yes, this happened last Saturday during the day, Donald, at Robinson Hall Car Park on the Port Road. So sometime between 4:40 p.m. and 4:50 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, the passenger side window of a parked car was smashed, and substantial damage was also caused to the steering column of the car. So again, we're appealing to anybody who may have travelled along the Port Road with dash cam between 4:30 p.m. and 5 p.m. on the state to make the footage available. And as a result of our inquiries, we are particularly interested in hearing about any sightings of a male person who was in the area at the time wearing a black and white hoodie and black tracksuit bottoms. So that's a male in the area with a black and white hoodie and black tracksuit bottoms. Again, any information could be passed on to the Gardaí Letterkenny, 07491-67100, Donal.
Staying in Letterkenny, an incident again at the weekend on Saturday.
Yes, this incident occurred on Saturday the 18th, sometime before 11:30 p.m, so that's Saturday night, in the Lou Negrina area of the Old Town. A resident in the area heard a bang and looked out to see a man in the back of a car. So he was sitting in the back of a car, and another male was standing nearby. So upon realising that they'd been disturbed, the two men jumped the fence and fled the scene. So we have a description. Both in their 20s, one was wearing a black jumper. So the rear windscreen of the car had been smashed during the incident, and fortunately, due to the action of the owner, nothing was stolen. So again, we're appealing for anybody who may have observed two males in the area. That's last Saturday night, the 18th of April, shortly before 11:30 p.m. in the Lee Negrain area of Old Town, to contact the Gardaí at Letterkenny. And again, anybody who was in that area with dash cam between 11 p.m. and midnight, we're asking them to get in touch with us also. And again, Gardaí Letterkenny, 0749167100, or again, the confidential line, Donal, 1-800-666-111.
Going back a week or so ago to the theft of a Jeep in Lifford.
Yes, so this is a theft of a white Mitsubishi Jeep, very distinguishable, Donal. Registration number DN17AXK. I'll say that again, it's DN17AXK. So this Jeep was stolen from a property in the area of the Hall Lifford last Tuesday between 1:30 p.m. Tuesday afternoon the 14th and 2:30 p.m. on the 16th. So sometime between Tuesday afternoon and Thursday afternoon, the Jeep was stolen. Again, anybody who has any relevant information in relation to the theft of the or the current whereabouts of the Jeep, to contact the Gardaí Letterkenny 07491 67100, or again the confidential line.
To Cairn Donnan now, and a criminal damage incident.
Yes, this is a criminal damage incident, Donal, that happened in the Ardbreed, Ballyluskey area of Cairn Donnan between 5 p.m. last Wednesday the 15th and 9 a.m. on Thursday the 16th. So sometime Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday night. The rear windscreen of a parked car in the area was smashed fortunately nothing was stolen from within the car. And again, if anybody can assist, to contact the Gardaí in Buchrana, 07493205400.
And a collision that happened at Fox Hills in Letterkenny.
Yes, it's a hit and run collision, Donal, which happened in the Fox Hills area of Letterkenny on Friday the 10th of April between 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. So sometime in the afternoon of that Friday. A parked car was damaged as a result of the collision. Damage was caused along the driver's side of the car, and unfortunately the other car or vehicle did not remain at the scene. So we're appealing to anybody who have been in the area at the time to contact us, or again anybody with dash cam to get in touch with us at Letterkenny, 0749167100.
The next one is an interesting one because it's an incident of burglary that was perpetrated and resolved almost instantaneously, it
yes,
seems.
Yes, the next two are probably a couple of good news stories, Donald, and we're thankful for the public. So last Friday the 17th, Gardaí received a report of a burglary in the progress of the Orchard Park area of Donegal Town. A man had entered a house and he took a number of bank cards from a purse within. The suspect was apprehended by the house homeowner and followed by the owner after the incident, and searched and apprehended by Gardaí, and the stolen bank cards were retrieved. The male person was subsequently arrested and charged and appear in court.
And then the second of those incidents in Newton Cunningham.
Yes, this is one that happened just last Sunday past. So sometime after 2:30 p.m. last Sunday the 19th, Gardaí and Letterkenny received a report in relation to the theft of a caravan from the Newton Cunningham area. The owner had been alerted to the theft via his CCTV. Again, shows the importance of having CCTV in your premises. And the caravan was observed in transit by Gardaí a short time later, and it was recovered. We did receive assistance from members of the public in relation to the recovery of the transit, and we appreciate that. And a man was arrested and charged and brought to court yesterday in Letterkenny. So it just goes to show the importance of CCTV and the importance of the assistance that we receive from the public in relation to solving crimes.
Now we're going to come to a really important issue, and that's traffic in Letterkenny on this coming Sunday, the 26th of April, because there's going to be a few cars about on that day. There's a match going on, apparently.
Yeah, I think there's a match. Again, it's the first Ulster Championship match in Letterkenny for 75 years. Donegal will play Down in the Senior Football Championship quarterfinal on Sunday the 26th with a throw-in at 3 p.m. So we've had numerous meetings with the club, Ulster Council and residents from the Ballymacool area, and a lot of work has gone in. The club are doing great work. They have done extra work to the facilities there to increase the capacity. The pitch looks great, and they're doing their best to get things right inside the ground. Donald, I suppose it's no good having everything right inside the ground if things aren't right outside the ground, and that falls with the Gardaí and also people attending the match. So just to let people aware that parking at O'Donnell Park will be limited to those attending with passes. So basically, there's no parking at the ground. The area around the ground is mainly restricted, with no parking available. Access in and out of Ballymacool Estate will be granted to residents only. So people coming to the ground will not get into Ballymacool Estate. The Residence Committee have issued two passes to each household. Gardaí will man the estate, and only people with passes will be permitted to enter the estate. The same applies to Kirkstown Road, which will be closed off at approximately 1 p.m. access to the Kirkstone Road will only be to people who live in the Kirkstone and that general area. So we're trying to encourage people to avail of the car parks and the shuttle buses in the town. So there will be a road closure from Cairn and Spar at Lower Main Street from 1:30 p.m. with limited access for local traffic. After the game, the road will also be closed for a period following the game to allow time for spectators to safely access the town car parks. So we're encouraging people to attending the game from the town side to arrive early and to avail of parking within the town. So there are a number of town car parks available. The overflow car park at the retail park on the Paddy Hart Road is available. I'm told there's 300 car parking spaces there. The park car park at the Old Dunn's 180 spaces. The Cathedral up and car park 90. Upper and Lower Main Street with up to 120 car parking spaces. And parking is free on Sundays. So we're asking people to arrive early, to avail of the parking within the town, and to walk to the grounds or to avail of the free shuttle bus which will be available from Cairn and Spar at Lower Main Street. There's also a shuttle bus at Tullygay from Cairnins and Tullygay, and we'll encourage people travelling from that direction to avail of the shuttle bus park at Cairnins. And Glenswilly GAA Club are also obliging their neighbours with a park and ride from Glenswilly GAA grounds. Again, people attending from the New Mill side of the ground are also advised to arrive early, avail of parking possibly in the Aura or in the car parks. Once the Aura is full, the traffic coming from the New Mills direction, people who do not avail of the park and ride will be requested to park along the roadside on the way out from O'Donnell Park on the left-hand side of the road, which we will permit and we will be manning. So again, are asking people to park in a responsible manner and to ensure that you're not blocking access for emergency vehicles, pedestrians or wheelchair users. Yeah. And again, delays are inevitable. We'll endeavour to assist traffic movement as much as possible. The large numbers attending will result in unavoidable delays, particularly after the game. Anybody going into town after the game from the New Mills directions is asked to do so via New Mills Bridge. And again, add additional time to your journey if possible.
And in terms of disabled parking, as you say, there is some disabled parking available in the vicinity of the ground. It's going to be limited. Is this going to be on a first-come, first-served basis, or can people apply for passes beforehand?
No, the disabled drivers will be facilitated.
Yeah, so there'll be, so if you have the and obviously appropriate badges,
yes,
etc.
You will be facilitated,
yeah, that's
so we're asking people to obey the directions from the Guardian Stewards. We wish everybody an enjoyable day and best of luck to both teams. Well, one team maybe.
We had Brendan Devaney yesterday, was quite unequivocal in his particular predictions on how things.
Well, he's the expert. Every time I turn on the TV, he seems to be on it.
That's fair enough. Absolutely. In terms of all that, so basically, and the message to the people is, look, get there early. Assume it's going to be difficult to park. Assume you're going to have, at the very least, a walk. And I suppose to people with the shuttle bus from Kernan's on the Letterkenny side in particular, it's going to be busy. If you're able to walk it, walk it.
Yes, I'm told the forecast is good, so everything's in our favour at the minute.
Happy days, Sergeant Eunan Walsh. It's a pleasure as always, and as we say, great to see you back. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donal.
And we'll have another Community Garda information slot next week.
Thank you.
Caller asks, why doesn't the government give money that they would be giving to EU as fines if they don't meet their targets? We should all get a piece of that money and use it to update our homes to make them more energy efficient. Climate change, another joke, says a caller. Just look at the bombs. They're dropping all over the Middle East and Ukraine. Start there, not in a small country like Ireland. Another caller. Climate change is a world scam, but we the people know this, and it's all the elites that are causing it. Look at what the planes in the sky are doing, spraying chemicals above the clouds down on top of us. That's what's causing climate change to our weather. Another caller asks, how does the professor judge the fact our wind energy has plateaued since 2020, yet we spent €34 billion on gas and constraint payments since 2020. What percentage of carbon in the atmosphere? He can't answer. What about all the wars? There are a couple of comments there relating back to the discussion we had with Professor John Sweeney there. Can people park along the road from Conwall into O'Donnell Park, or is there no parking on the road? As Sergeant Walsh did say there, you can park on the left-hand side going out only. And also there is a very important mass taking place in the cathedral on Sunday. That's an anniversary mass relating to the O'Donnell fire 40 years ago, and the Cathedral car park, we're being told the request is that that be restricted over the weekend to people attending the O'Donnell Family Memorial, which is taking place in the Cathedral. And if I'm correct, that memorial taking place on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Cathedral. Now, yesterday we referenced in our paper review the Letterkenny bus shelter, which is to be expanded in the vicinity of Mr. Chippy, with a bigger and better shelter to be constructed, providing more shelter, providing some seating and more facilities for the elderly and the disabled. But we did say that in the longer term, there is a plan for a bus station. It's to be situated in the vicinity of what was the old bacon factory, just beside Linnealy House on the Pierce Road, that area which at the moment is just a complete jungle, it looks like. It's just in there. Now, joined on the line by Ryan Doherty, who has an interest in promoting tourism via coach transport. Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. How are we?
Very well indeed. Ryan, you say Letterkenny needs a bus and a coach station for all, something like a Buchanan bus station in Glasgow with stands for everyone and overnight parking for the likes of tour coaches, etc. Now, there is some limited overnight parking for tour coaches just in the vicinity of the old courthouse there. But you believe this new bus station that will be developed in the longer term, or I think they're terming it a transport hub, that transport hub at Pierce Road should make specific provision for tour buses as well as for your other bus services.
Yes, the bus shelter up in Letterkenny basically is not fit for purpose, Donald, because it's very, very dangerous, and you know, especially I know there's talks about. Yeah, extending it and everything out there and stuff out there, but it's still not fit for purpose, really. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, look, as I say, Letterkenny definitely needs a transport hub for all operators to allow people to go in and maybe sit in a safe area to board and disembark a coach, safe and sound and stuff like that there, and where the shelter was, it wasn't suitable for for coaches that are near up to 12 meters and 40 meters, like, you know, and like at certain times during the day, you see that jam packed and people trying to get on and everything you got there, and it's just basically it's not safe. So Letterkenny definitely needs a transport hub for all, and you know, and the hub itself, like, there could be information centres and stuff like that there, and also maybe allow people to say screens there to say for, like, if you want to book a ticket for a service or something out there, and somewhere to sit in and have a tea or coffee and talk facilities and stuff like that there before you get on with stuff like that, and you know, and as I was saying, for the coach tour operators to come and visit, like, I know around that might be a bit tight space, but especially now in the tourism season and stuff like that there, like, I think a lot of operators to stay within the town itself, like, I think, you know, they want their coach to be in a safe place and stuff like that there, like, you know. So I think, you know, I think a facility like that there would definitely benefit.
A very interesting point. And as I say, we do know, did you contribute, there was a consultation some time ago with regards to that proposed transport hub. As I say, they're developing it at that old bacon factory, the site there just beyond Linnealy House, sort of opposite the Chili Shaker on Pierce Road. Now, it's going to take a lot of work before that site's even ready for development because it's completely overgrown at the moment.
I understand that.
I mean, do you accept that is a good site for this?
Where the oatfield factory used to be, both those sites would be the great, you know, and You know, it's just you just want a safe place for everyone to get on and disembark the coach. Out along Jota, it's very, very unsafe and everything there. Like, everyone's jamming in, and like, especially, like, with that being a small shelter, like, if it's a rainy day, not everyone wants to get onto a service coach, you know. So
And in fairness as well, I mean, there has been such a growth in the number of local link buses coming in, and you can really see that in Letterkenny and elsewhere. There's a huge increase in coming in from Inishowen, coming in from Fannad, coming in from West Donegal, and as more and more of those local link services use that area around Mr. Chippy, as we call it, then, you know, it is becoming quite full already. So, Ryan, it's a very interesting perspective, and thank you very much indeed for sharing it with us, and it's certainly something I'm sure
that the council
will be taking on board. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I just want to give a shout out to all my co-driver friends out there. You all do a great job.
Thank you very much indeed. That was Ryan there. Just a couple of your comments before we go any further. Caller says St Junan's and Letterkenny is a terrible place for the Donegal match. You can't get in and out of the place. Some of the players are on record as saying that they don't like playing there. The game should be in Ballyshannon. Well, I suppose there's been a lot of work done developing the St Junan's ground. Residents in Japan's northeast have been told to evacuate immediately, and a nuclear power plant in the affected area is being checked to determine the impact of the earthquake. We could have a nuclear fallout without any war. This is one of the very reasons why we should not have nuclear power. And that's interesting, because there has been a debate starting to grow again, with people saying, well, maybe perhaps we should be having nuclear power in this country. Caller says, with regards to immigration, what about all the young people who have to leave Ireland due to not seeing a future? They don't see a way to buy a house or further themselves in their career. We've been asked to point out that confidential shredding will take place on Friday, April 24th at the Letterkenny Shopping Centre in association with United Shredding Company and Letterkenny Rotary Club, all for just a donation to the Donegal Down Syndrome Association. You will see your confidential documents shreds in the USL machine. It'll be situated on the right-hand side of the car park near the entrance from 10:30 until 12 midday. And that note comes to us from Rotary. Now, we've had a question from a caller with regards to the use of agency staff by the HSC. And I'm going to just go through this for a moment. No, I'm not. I'm going to leave that, actually, because we are joined on the line by Deputy Darren O'Rourke, who is the Sinn Féin Education spokesperson. We heard a claim from a local TD, Patrick McLaughlin, that the government is sleepwalking into the worst ever crisis in special education this September, and Sinn Féin is calling for an all-party Rockless committee on the future of inclusive education. As we said, Deputy Darren O'Rourke is Sinn Féin's education spokesperson, and he joins us. Darren, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Talk to us about what you hope a special Rockless Committee on Inclusive Education would achieve.
Well, we would like the establishment of that committee to do something similar to what the Sláinte Care Committee did 10 years ago, which was to agree a cross-party consensus, in that case, on the long-term vision for healthcare and health policy, and to make recommendations to government. We can argue whether, and I'm fairly sure, the successive governments haven't acted on those recommendations. But I think it is really important, given the changing profile and demand in our education system, that we do have a cross-party consensus on the long-term vision for inclusive education in Ireland, and that committee would make recommendations to government, and that we would hear from parents, from communities, from teachers, from children themselves, about their experiences, and that we would have the best possible informed policy. Because what we have at the minute instead is a government that is acting by stealth. It is cutting supports and essential services for children. And we saw it with the SNA debacle, the crisis, and what the government had intended to do there was to remove SNA support for children who desperately need it. But we've also seen it elsewhere, whether it's in terms of language disorder classes, mild and general learning disability special schools, the introduction of inclusive special classes last week, the removal of early intervention classes, the removal of complex needs as a criteria for the allocation of special education teachers. So what we've had over years at this stage is a hollowing out of our inclusive education system, our special education system, whilst at the same time, governments and ministers are literally taking parents to the courts in order for them to vindicate their rights on behalf of their children for an access to education. We have literally at this stage hundreds of children with additional needs who don't have an offer of a school place for this September. And that's simply unacceptable. And the only reason they don't have an offer is because they have those additional needs. And that's wrong. It's immoral. It's unjust, in my opinion. And we cannot come to this situation year after year after year like we seem to be. And the reason we are is because government haven't put the resources in, they haven't planned, they haven't prepared, and more than anything else, they haven't delivered the type of capacity, the support, the physical spaces that that are needed to support children with additional needs. And all we're looking for here, and yeah. I'm a parent of three small children, and the same as any other parent, what you want is the best for your kids, that they have the opportunity.
Realistically,
to
though,
reach
is
their own
an Oireachtas committee going to change things? I mean, an Oireachtas committee will create another level of conversation at a political level. Is anything going to be said in an Oireachtas committee that isn't said on a regular basis in the Dáil Chamber by yourself and by your colleagues in Donegal and elsewhere? Is an Oireachtas committee going to come up with something new, or is it going to rehash the same debate points over and over again?
So in the first instance, we want to be very clear here. Our immediate ask is not that we abandon processes and jump into an Oireachtas committee and spend the next year talking to ourselves. Our immediate ask, and it's included in this motion, is that there's a guaranteed appropriate school place for every child for this September, that there's increased supports and investment in the special education system. That's the first ask. In the longer term, we believe that the government's approach and successive government's approach has been to make changes without consultation and behind closed doors. And the purpose of a special Oireachtas committee is to bring all of those conversations into the light. So I agree. The answers are there. In my opinion, the path forward is clear. But it's not government policy, and there's contradictions within government policy. And the practice within government policy is to take initiatives without consultation, based on their own judgment. And the sum total of it is to withdraw supports or to deny supports to children who desperately need them. And that is not the way forward, in my opinion. And we believe that Special Oireachtas Committee could serve a useful purpose in airing all of that, and ultimately in setting out policy that informs not just this government but future governments, but most importantly, that holds governments to account.
Deputy Darren O'Rourke, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We'll be keeping a very close eye on this one with interest. Between 1984 and 1994, I was in my 20s. And it was a really interesting time to be in your 20s in the sporting world, because you had some people that were international names in sport. And when you speak to tennis and speak about tennis to many people, who's the first person that comes to your mind when you think of tennis? And I will have to say, when I think tennis, the first person that jumps into my mind is going to be John McEnroe, and is always going to be John McEnroe, because I was around when John McEnroe was at his height. Now, my own children barely know who John McEnroe was. In fact, probably don't know who John McEnroe was, but I surely do. And my next guest on Zoom absolutely does, because he's just done what promises to be a very interesting documentary all about said Mr. McEnroe. Delighted to say welcome, Lachlan Hart.
How are you, Donal?
Very well indeed, Lachlan. You're the writer and editor of Snap, the John McEnroe Default Saga. This looks interesting. Tell us about this latest documentary.
Yeah, so I was living in Perth for a year, and I met up with a podcast company over there called Backchat Studios, who focus highly on sports podcasting. And I had pitched a series idea to them, and they came back and said, look, we have another project in the pipeline with the Australian Open. Would you be interested? And I jumped at it when I heard John McEnroe was part of it. And basically, they had recorded about 17 interviews, and they just threw it at me and said, OK, can you make a series out of this? So I was like, OK. And basically, I had to do my research and listen through to everything, because they were telling stories as they remembered it, but I needed to find out about it from the audience's perspective. So it revolves around a moment in 1990 when John McEnroe was the very first man ever defaulted, as they call it, or a disqualification from a Grand Slam. And the podcast series itself revolves around that specific moment. Like, how did it come to that point where we all knew McEnroe was pretty volatile, but how did he get so bad that he was disqualified? How did the tournament let it happen? What happened? And the aftermath. And the podcast kind of centers around everybody on court who was involved that day. So we have like the lineswoman who called an out ball against John McEnroe, which he didn't agree with. We have the umpire on the day. We have the tournament director. We have the referee. We have all these people involved, and they're all given their explanation of what happened. And we have John McEnroe himself and his brother, Patrick McEnroe, and lots of other players like Pat Cash and things like that that were big at the time. They're all talking about like what drove him to the brink of madness, and was it actually John McEnroe's fault? That's ultimately what we're answering.
Yeah, and just to give people context, because as I said, as soon as I saw the name John McEnroe, I could see exactly where this was going, because McEnroe would have been famous all the way through the 80s, really, and the phrase most associated with him would have been, "You cannot be serious." McEnroe would argue everything, and he would do so vociferously, and he would scream and roar and throw tantrums and break. I mean, God knows how many rackets the man went through, because he smashed hundreds of rackets on courts over these. And remember as well, now we have electronic, and we have the beeps, and we have the tennis equivalent of VAR, and we have all the electronic aids. We did not have that back then. What we had were the umpire's eyes. And you had the umpire's eyes, and you had McEnroe's voice, and the two sometimes mixed like oil and water.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is at the time this happened, the Australian Open, they were really struggling as a Grand Slam. You know, it wasn't in a very nice area. The courts were old, and it was at the end of a tennis season, basically. So none of the professionals basically wanted to go to Australia at the end of the year, where it was 40 degrees heat and not a really nice tournament and not a whole lot of money. So Australia tried to change it, and they brought in this new style of umpiring where they actually got umpires and trained them really professionally to a high standard. But that didn't really suit McEnroe, because he liked to get his way. So all of a sudden you had this establishment versus player situation where it was just like a fireball about to explode, waiting for these two to collide. And that's exactly what happened. So while the Australian Open set a new standard in umpiring, it also created a real drama in terms of tennis, with John McEnroe being kicked out for the first time.
Now, I'm watching the clock, and it's going to beat us, but we do have two clips to play. So do you want to introduce the clips now at this point? The first one is...
So we'll play the first one. That's Di Larkin. She's the lines lady. And it's about the moment where John McEnroe is coming to basically square up to her on the side of the court.
The footage is extraordinary. McEnroe, standing in front of a line umpire's chair, bouncing a ball on his racket, staring at her. 15,000 people watching, some laughing, some leaning forward. The camera finding Di Larkin's face. No expression, looking straight ahead. While one of the most famous athletes in the world stands 2 feet in front of her.
So all I can do is do what I'm doing now in this interview is just look ahead, concentrate, look ahead. But the crowd are laughing, and the crowd are egging him on, and the crowd think this is entertaining, and he starts bouncing the ball up on his racket. And it's not until I've looked at replays that 7 times he does this. But at no stage does he speak to me or say anything. And he's got the white zinc on his lips. He's got his headband on. He's not saying anything.
And the interesting thing there is the crowds egging him on, because that's almost what you would have come to expect from John McEnroe. A lot of people didn't go there to see John McEnroe play tennis. They went to see him throw a hissy fit.
Yeah, and they got that. Well, they actually, weirdly, if you listen to the pod, it's almost the opposite of what they got in the end. So it's definitely worth seeing what happened after that moment, you know, how John reacted to being disqualified. You'd expect him to go absolutely wild, but you might as well hear it in his own words in the pod. And the next clip is basically, it's a nice clip of John himself.
Boy, I've tried to put that out of my mind, as you could probably imagine. Probably wasn't my crowning achievement. So I don't remember a whole lot of what, you know, led up to me getting walking on the court. But I do remember it was very hot. I remember that I felt like, I know this is hard to believe, but I felt like I was getting some bad calls, particularly in the baseline. So I decided to go over and sort of give him a stare down. You know, I figured that way I couldn't get any type of warning or anything. If I didn't say anything, what, you know, how could anything happen?
And something most certainly did happen. Lachlan, as I feared, time is beating us. Tell us how we can actually get to see this. When will it be broadcast? And I suppose it'll be broadcast in Australia first, but we're going to be really anxious to see it here in Europe as well.
So thankfully, this is just an audio-only podcast. So you can get it on Apple, you can get it on Spotify, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. Episode one is out and it'll be released every week for the next 3 weeks after this week. So episode one, The Super Brat Arrives, is out already.
Mm. And it's called Snap, writer and editor of that podcast, Lachlan. See, I'm so used to you doing video documentaries now and watching your produce all over
That's my brother, actually. My brother's doing the video and I do the audio.
Well covered. You see, there's so many of these hearts now in culture and media. You lose sight of them half the time. I've been on stage with half your relatives, for God's sake, over the years. Lachlan, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed. And that brings us to the end of the Greg Hughes Show for this morning. It's been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much to all our guests, most especially thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Shannon for all her help. Thanks to Caroline for producing. And as always, holding my hand, John Breslin is up next around the Northwest. But for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a great day.